Hi, everybody. Welcome to the worldwide leader in contrarian ahlery. That is Objection. And because, Dan Mancini, we are funded by a generous grant from the old white man cabal,
yes.
They sent an edict. How did they send it this time? Was it homing pigeon or on the tip of a blowgun dart? How did they get us?
I think it was by hawk.
By hawk. Yes. So yes, the old man white cabal, the old white man cabal falconer sent this this missive saying we had to do a James Bond / Skyfall podcast because they are still smarting from the bad press they got from Quantum of Solace, where they were, you know, they were pretty much the scapegoat of that whole movie, if you recall.
They did a poor job. Yeah, poor showing for themselves.
So, and to do that, we brought along fellow Bond lover Daryl Loomis, who you may recall when we talked about some Bond on the Friday Filibuster. But we figured we needed to really do right by the old white man cabal, so we brought Daryl along. So, Daryl, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Dan, you know, I'm going to just kick it over to you because we did talk a little bit on the Friday Filibuster. So let's just get right to it. Skyfall, obviously, kind of the talk of the town. Daryl and I have kind of made our thoughts pretty clear. Now, what are you thinking? What was your thinking on Skyfall?
I really, really loved it. And this is the first Sam Mendes film that I've actually liked at all.
When it came out, I liked American Beauty, but not since. Yeah. And, I was really surprised how good of a job he did on this thing.
Yeah, action was great. I liked that it was unabashedly a James Bond movie. As much as I love Casino Royale and I like Quantum just fine. Both of them to one extent or another sort of run away from being James Bond movies.
Well, Quantum embraces the Bourne. The Bourne identity / I don't know, conspiracy, whatever, you know. Noam Chomsky maybe, I don't know. You know, just that was definitely, I was definitely seeing a lot of Bourne in there. Casino Royale was more kind of a brute action movie as well, you know.
And a good movie.
Great movie. Love Casino. Yeah. Like we said, right, Daryl, we said, like, without Casino Royale, there's no Skyfall.
No, but Skyfall got back to some of the fundamentals of being Bond.
Yes.
And Daniel Graham owned it.
You still like saying Daniel Graham. It's Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig. Why do
Who
I have
is
to
Daniel
keep
Graham?
That?
Yeah. You're not confusing him with Jimmy Graham from the New Orleans Saints, are you?
I could be. Okay. I'm going to look up who Daniel Graham is real fast just to see who the hell I'm thinking of.
Yes, continue, Dan.
Sorry about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I love about it, too, is it is this kind of break from the previous two movies, yet it's the logical extension of them. I mean, I walked out of Quantum of Solace when I saw it in the theater thinking the next one has to be full-on James Bond. Like, they've brought the character to the place where he is now the James Bond that we know.
Yeah, cause
going forward, and Skyfall delivers on that.
It does. There wasn't even a money penny in the first two, right?
Right.
Right.
So, you know, they've brought basically everything back that they need to make a real old-school James Bond movie.
And you know what was interesting, too, is, like, even though Judy Dench kind of crossed over from the Pierce Brosnan stuff, I mean, are we to say that this was not her character from the Pierce Brosnan movies, right?
No, yeah, I mean, think it's a different M.
Yeah, different, yeah, so same actress, but totally different character, same name even, too, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same role, really.
But her, yeah, her relationship to Bond is very different.
Yeah, much more motherly.
Yeah, it's definitely maternal.
And there's even that moment in GoldenEye where Tanner, who's her, or M's, I mean, even going back to when Bernard Lee played the role, his, I don't know, right-hand man, kind of calls her the queen of something. He has some sort of derogatory term at the beginning of the movie when she's first introduced, indicating that, you know, this is sort of a new, more bureaucratic M that Bond is now dealing with. Brosnan's Bond is now dealing with. Whereas, you know, obviously in the Craig movies, she's the first one. And so she is this sort of mother figure, that she's not in the Brosnan pictures.
Yeah, and so talk villain a little bit. Talk about Silva.
Bartom was just fantastic, I thought. I mean, just chewed scenery, great, much more memorable than either of the villains in Casino or Quantum.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a guy like who would walk out of a 70s softcore foreign erotic thriller or something. You know, like,
right.
His character seemed to have starred in Erotic Diary of a Lumberjack. He was just just creepy and unnerving and full-on psychosis at the end there, too.
And that's one of those areas. I mean, Mendes has been very upfront about saying that he was inspired by The Dark Knight, that he really used that as the template. And I thought that Bardem, it's not like he's doing an imitation of the Joker, but he walks the same line where he is incredibly entertaining every moment that he's on screen.
Now, did Mendes
actually can't take your eyes off of him.
Did Mendes actually say that? Did he say that The Dark Knight was an influence?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not hear that because we were talking about that it feels like it felt like Casino Royale may have been your Batman Begins, and this felt like Dark Knight. And I looked at it like just because going to what you said, Dan. You know, when Silva's on screen, not only is just kind of crazy, but you know that anything can happen, right? Like, you just don't feel safe. So.
Well, his whole plan was pretty ill-advised when it comes down to it.
Right. And you kind of see how psycho he was, you know.
Yeah.
About it.
He's been planning a long time to get captured.
He was running with his gat out. That was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it worked because he was, I mean, like you said, just chewing the scenery and you know, turning MI6 into a clown show. And, he worked great. He worked as I don't even remember who the villains were in Quantum or Casino Royale, but I won't forget Bardem in this.
No. Yeah. There's something about that blonde hair makes his profile incredibly creepy.
Yes.
I mean, he's just one creepy dude in that movie.
Yeah. And it's just his cadence. Not all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
His laugh. And then a straight up creepiness when he removes whatever orthodontist mouthpiece he had.
Okay. Yes. That was a good effect.
It was.
That was a really nice effect.
That separates him from, you know, movie star and goblin. You know? Which is kind of that was a nice little callback to Bond villains of yore. I mean, you know, so it wasn't to the extreme of, like, diamonds embedded in a guy's face.
But cyanide can't kill him.
That's right. Cyanide can kill him and it messes. So he survived cyanide in it, but he had this ghoulish exterior. So that was kind of that nice little kind of callback. I mean, you know, Casino Royale had it with Lachif and he cried blood. So they all had those little affectations, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People have complained about no henchmen, but I can't see how Javier Bardem could have had a henchman.
So like a
Jaws or a
or our personal favorite Necros.
Necros.
That's true. It was very henchman. It was like it was Bardem and cannon fodder, really.
Yeah, it was like the G.I. Joe villains when Snakes Reigns on the or whatever his name was. Cobra Commander was on the screen. It's just everybody gets blown away but him. So that's fine because he's.
Right, that seems nitpicking to me. This gave us everything else.
Everything else.
I mean, is that like a legitimate complaint, though? I mean, I don't mind.
I don't know that's a legitimate complaint, but, you know, people like the stuff like throw, you know, top hat that can cut off somebody's head and, you know, junk like that. Jorge Vilches in everybody loves that in Man with the Golden Gun. And none of that.
I'm fine without him. I mean, if the alternative is Skyfall and it's badassness to Herbie Velges, I think we're fine. I mean, that kind of opens up a larger question about the action because, you know, the other rumblings I've heard is like they kind of, so they shoot their wad with a big action scene pre-credits, which is huge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, it kind of goes to that quality over quantity, I guess. I mean, for quite a lot, a helicopter runs into a mansion, so that's not a small action set piece, you know?
No.
Oh.
But it's still pretty intimate stuff, and there's no huge fight scene between Bond and the bad guy at the end, you know, so there's no running around the satellite dish or...
They had the Home Alone style gadgets, you know, the glass shard bulbs and...
But I find that stuff thrilling. Like, I find that stuff...
I thought that stuff was... Trap in the House was a great scene, just, you know, the scene where they set up the traps.
I just find that thrilling. I mean, that kind of stuff. In general, I find even Home Alone I found thrilling at the point. Let's be honest. So I mean, I just think it worked. You know, I just loved how it worked. I mean, it was just the dude with shotgun and propane tanks just taking out these guys.
And I think in terms of the movie's rhythm, the way that it balances action and drama, it's much more of a Bond film than a Jason Bourne film or a more modern, you know, constant action in your face all the time. That's not traditionally what Bond has been. And I was able to settle in and enjoy it more.
Right.
Yeah. Casino Royale, I think, was really going for more of a modern action movie feel with little regard to Bond of the past.
Right. And as much as and I love Casino Royale, but the thing about Skyfall is it doesn't have real gimmicky action. Like, even Casino Royale has the parkour thing.
Right. You know, and
there's
and
too
the
much
building,
of that in Bond films.
And the building,
you know, GoldenEye jumping off the, you know, bungee jumping and stuff. It's like whatever the latest extreme sport is.
Wait a minute. This isn't a shot at Pierce Brosnan windsurfing on the tidal waves while being hit by a laser beam, is it? Which, to me, isn't that funny? Like, that was the last movie before the Craig reboot and stuff. And to me, that was like either the pinnacle or the nadir, am I pronouncing that right, of Bond ridiculous action.
And yes.
To me, like, when he was windsurfing over the, over the tidal waves while Toby Stevens was trying to shoot him in the laser using the power glove, it was like, that is, I think we've kind of crossed threshold here.
So, I mean, that's almost literally Fonzie jumping the shark.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to your point, that is, I forget your point, but your point then was the rhythm of it, and because everything did make sense, and even the chase scene when Bardem gets out, there's no like big. I mean, the train flies through, which is pretty exciting, whatever. But it's all the tension. It's all the question of what his plot is, even though it turns out to be pretty caveman-like, but still, you know, something's bad's going on. There's tension there. You know, M is at risk. You know, something's cooking. So it's not exactly the Penguin. I just saw Batman Returns recently, so it's not like the Penguin popping through the dance hall in his little plastic penguin built, you know, boat.
Right.
But you know, something bad.
And they
pay
it off. His plot is caveman, but the movie in the third act pays that off in a big way. That is emotionally satisfying. And, you know, works and sets up the series to move forward.
Which really is the big one, which really to me is the most satisfying thing. How, like, I was actually surprised. I was surprised by a lot of that stuff I should have seen coming. But as soon as he walks into that office, which is the Bond office, right? And the leather upholstered door. And so M and Moneypenny all
out. Because you think Ralph Fiennes is a douche through the whole movie. And until that shootout in the courthouse,
and Moneypenny as dictated,
this dude's for real,
and Moneypenny as dictated by Hollywood action movie standards, should have parachuted in at the end there, guns blazing, to show James Bond Halle Berry style that she is awesome in the field and screw you, man. You know,
it pays
off in a surprising way. Where I suck in the field, so
she's crappy at it. So
I'm gonna rock this desk, rock this desk job.
And I can totally accept Ralph Fiennes as M.
Yes,
that makes
yes.
perfect sense
yes,
to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, those are, you know, Judi Dench has owned that role in a way that nobody has since Bernard Lee. And it's hard to replace her. And so if you're going to do it, Ralph Fiennes is about as good as you can get. I
mean, it really pays off the Judi Dench arc from the Craig Bonds, too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, she was brought in with as this kind of almost like an antagonist, right, with a Brosnan Bond, like, oh, you chauvinist swine, and just always that kind of antagonist. And, you know, there was some of that tension where she's like, you know, you're a blunt instrument and all that stuff, but the trajectory, when you look back on it, you can kind of see that the subtle was like, she was fond of him, you know, and then it really, and then you really get into the maternal stuff towards the end there, you know, but, like, even, like, they call back to Casino Royale when they, didn't they mention that Bond was an orphan in the Casino Royale, or he had some kind of?
It's, I think they mentioned
it. It was like real passing, right? I think it was during his.
Well, he has that. He there's that moment when they're on their way to Casino Royale,
right?
And he kind of reads her,
yeah,
and she reads him back, and you can tell that she gets close to home. She talks about him being an orphan, and
we just don't expect that. You don't expect that kind of character prodding in a Bond movie, you know? So I think it was just kind of, I just kind of like, okay, it was kind of thrown off. It was just a gag to show that, you know, she's his, you know, equal as far as wit, you know, the wit goes, but they actually paid it off here. Like,
the closest it ever came before was in Honor Majesty's Secret Service when his wife dies.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, he's basically like a non-human. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have an apartment that gets rented out to somebody else. Because he goes on a pill spree.
Right.
Well, of course, as cool as that was in Magic Secret Service, it is always overshadowed by the sex kilt. As we've
talked. Sex kilt tears it down.
So. let's see. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm actually dying to see this a second time. Have you guys seen it only the once?
Yeah, I am actually dying to see it a second time.
Yeah, because until I see it again, I don't want to sit down and just call it my favorite Bond movie, but I don't remember the last time I enjoyed one so much.
I think Casino Royale, I really loved. I mean, I loved it because, I mean, because it's obviously great even now, but we have to remember where Bond was before that movie came. And the baggage leading into that movie, all the questions about Daniel Craig and blah, blah, blah. I mean, our last vision was Bond windsurfing the tidal wave in the invisible car. Just craziness. So, you know, there was the layover, and then there was the whole, you know, James Bond and all that stuff. So it was a complete surprise. Martin Campbell took it in a different way. I mean, it was just, it was nothing you were expecting. So I mean, that movie, I remember walking out, I'm like, wow, that was badass. To the point where Quantum of Solace, I mean, I'm not going to say it's horrible, but I really don't remember. I have no desire to watch it again. You know, to me, it was just kind of disposable. But this one, like, I really, the easiest way for me to say is, like, it's the Batman Begins Dark Knight, you know, analogy. That's just how it works. Like,
yeah, it works. I mean, and the plot is shockingly similar to Dark Knight in so many ways. So, you know, it doesn't bother me, though. It doesn't. It seems to really work for the Bond character. And
it has a different rhythm than The Dark Knight. It's not it doesn't have the same propulsion, which you could look at as a fault, but I think it works for Bond. I think it's the right pace and tone for Bond.
Well, what I love about the comparison, again, something we had talked about in the filibuster, was how, you know, with The Dark Knight, Batman and the Joker are very similar personalities with psychosis of all their own, but they've opted to kind of channel them in different ways. They take divergent paths. You know, I think Bond and Silva can, you know, they're both agents. They're both kind of screwed over. They're both, you know, pretty damaged goods, brilliant, excellent at their job. But again, they kind of went on divergent paths as well. And, you know, they're kind of fighting over M. And I don't know, I guess Dark Knight fighting over Gotham.
And that's the key.
That's getting too deep, I think.
That's kind of the key, because one of the criticisms I've heard of it is that it's a little close to GoldenEye in terms of plotting, because you have other form. Right. But I think it works so much better in Skyfall because it's so grounded in the conflict with M.
That's right, because it's not
that,
like,
it's paid off in a very different and much more satisfying way.
Because it's not personal, like, it's not personal between Silva and Bond.
Right.
It was like the, you know, Sean Bean's character was kind of more him versus Bond. You know,
and they set up at the beginning of the movie so that, I mean, everything is coherent, as in The Dark Knight. Everything contributes to the whole. So even that opening action sequence, it sets Bond up to have the same doubts about M that Silva does through the whole movie.
Yeah. And
it's
so
not
that
just
makes
a throwaway
swim.
Action pick, an action scene. It is there to build character and move plot.
Yes.
It delivers a question about whether or not he's going to actually take Silva seriously here, you know, and move over to his side. Not that it's going to happen, but it leaves the question open a little bit more than it ever could be before.
And, you know, and it kind of, what I liked about it was that it showed that M, as, you know, Judi Dench's M, was, you know, like, there were flaws there. You know, there was, like, Silva had legitimate gripes. You know, I mean, he legitimately got screwed over. You know, maybe he was playing outside the lines, and that was kind of a throwaway thing, you know. And it is M's job, but, you know, it's very much as much as M's movie as Bond's movie, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's her story. I mean, she's obviously no version of M has ever taken this central a role.
Right. What it raises is there's this problem of expecting these agents to not be human. And that's an idea that begins in Casino Royale. This idea that once you enter into this path of being a 00, you're giving up something in your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets paid off finally in Skyfall, which is great.
Nice. Now, so Skyfall, fantastic. And it got applause. It definitely got applause when the little James Bond will return. And, I mean, talk about bring it on. You know, I mean, it was just, at the very least, that it succeeded wildly in making you crave the next installment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
after Quantum, I was like, eh, whatever. But this
I also have to say that one of my favorite post-kill, you know, one-liners ever has got to be the Last Rat Standing.
Last Rat Standing, yeah, that wasn't bad. Yeah. That was pretty good.
That's just pretty because good. It's mean.
It was, yeah. It's pretty, that was mean. It wasn't, like, playful. It wasn't playful and macabre. It was.
No, no.
It wasn't Schwarzenegger,
you know,
delivered.
He promised to kill me last.
That's right.
I kind of hate it. It was way meaner than that.
Yeah, that was mean. Yeah, he had no compassion for the gentleman with the knife sticking out of his back. So let's talk let's get into some other Bond stuff. I know you've got the Bond Blu-ray set, huh, Dan?
Yes.
Have you been digging into that? Is there anything? I've got all the DVD.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the DVD set way back.
Mm-hmm.
So is
yes,
this something?
I had that and I upgraded. It is worth the upgrade. Yeah. It's just for AV quality. It is, I think. Some of the movies, you know, Honor Majesty's Secret Service on the DVD is just that thing is riddled with edge enhancement and stuff. So looks so much better on Blu-ray. Great sound. Just a blast to watch through them, even though some of them are horrible.
See, that's the other thing. I've been kind of picking and choosing my Bond Blu-ray upgrades. So, you know, right. Casino Royale for sure. Obviously, License to Kill. You know, that was a no. Mm-hmm.
And that looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looks because the movies in that period, in that kind of 80s, early 90s, you know, they're not – a lot of them are sort of drab. They're just sort of workmanly in terms of – the way they were shot and stuff, but License to Kill really looks good. Really vibrant color. I mean,
as
it just blows GoldenEye out of the water in terms of.
Yeah, GoldenEye, yeah, it was something that nothing really impressed me there. So,
yeah,
so I've been like picking and choosing, you know, like, so For Your Eyes Only, grab that one. So,
good one, yeah.
Like, yeah, but
definitely Honor Majesty's Secret Service because you get the, you know, the kill.
The clarity of the sex kill.
Clarity of the sex kill.
Sex kill. The dubbed voice, you know, during his whole
oh yeah,
his visit, you know, he's got that proper British accent.
Oh,
he's dubbed by somebody else. That looks great.
Does that bobsled fight looks? Yeah, how's that projection footage looking?
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, I tell you about it.
But it's nice to have them in order too. I mean, it always bugged me that the DVDs were in random.
Yeah, that's true. No rhyme or reason, right?
Yeah. It was basically their way of forcing me to buy the Roger Moore movies, you know, on DVD. But
how about From Russia with Love? One of my all-time favorites. How's that looking?
The early ones are spectacular.
Oh, really? All right.
I mean, I really think that the earliest from, you know, Dr. No through Thunderball are the ones that it's most shocking to see how improved they are. I mean, color is just really vibrant. They look pristine. From Russia with Love, which is, I think, my favorite still, even above Skyfall, is that looks just great.
There's no Never Say Never Again in that set, right?
No, there's not.
That's too bad. Always good to compare.
Yes, and, you know, as much
I've,
as
I always had time.
Just that one, look, and it has a terrible soundtrack. It's so much better than Octopussy.
No, it is.
Came out the same year.
Oh, I have a hard time with pudgy, middle-aged Sean Connery banging Kim.
He's actually in better shape in that movie than he was in Diamonds Are Forever. He's a lot pudgier in Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay.
You know, he's got a good tan and Never Say Never. He looks fit.
Yeah, he does have a tan, yeah, but I don't know. That was, you know, a lot of it was kind of unsettling to see his cavorting with the lovely Kim Basinger. Right? Kim Basinger is in that one, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Very wooden, you know.
Very wooden, but that's not the point.
Great villain, though. Who was the – oh, Klaus Brandauer. He was a real douchebag.
I've seen that movie once.
Great.
That's all I remember from Kim Basinger. Yeah, well, saying it's better than Octopussy is damning with faint praise, isn't it?
Yes.
Fair enough.
How is Roger Moore's clown makeup in high definition?
Oh, it sparkles.
Super convincing.
Does that Tarzan call in 5.1 DTS-HD?
Yes, it's magnificent. Magnificent. And in Moonraker, the pigeon double take is...
Good.
Oh, good, yeah. That's
spectacular.
Important in Bond history.
He's driving around in a gondola.
Oh, man, the pigeon double thing, yes.
So good.
Okay, well, this is another good segue because I had wanted to do. Let's, since we are talking Bond, let's have some fun here. We're each going to be tasked with just a kind of little ambush topic type of thing, but just we'll share our favorite moments or least favorite moments of Bond. So I'll start off, and I'll just throw this out to you guys. My question to you is your favorite, not the main bad guy, but henchman kill in Bond. Not the main bad guy. It could be the number two on down. So any henchman.
Yeah.
Any henchman.
Let's see.
Ooh, there's music in the back.
Does Red Grant count as a number two?
Yeah, I think so, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably have to go with that one.
Because he's answering. He's answering to higher powers in there, right?
Yeah, I do also like when Connery in Dr. No is just sitting in that darkened room, waits for that guy to come in, and then, you know, the guy comes in and shoots the pillows, thinking it's Bond under the covers, and then he just kind of waits and knows his gun is out and offs the dude.
Nice.
Mercilessly.
Nice. Daryl, how about your favorite death by henchman? Henchman death.
Favorite henchman death itself? I missed that part. Hang on. Let me think for a second longer.
Any non main bad guy, but anyone underneath, any of the rank and file. From the number two on down. Okay, while you think, okay. I think, like, to me, it's you could pick any from License to Kill. Because in License to Kill, they're the most brutal one.
But there's one you have to.
You have to go Benicio del Toro.
Yes, in
feet first,
the cocaine grinding machine.
But, yeah, I mean, just brutal.
Which we've discussed. Is that just some sort of generic grinder that was made for something else? Or is there a company that actually makes cocaine grinding?
Grinders? I don't know.
Machinery.
All I know is that it proves for just a painful, painful death.
Plus, you got the guy who blows up in the oxygen chamber thing.
That's a good – look, it's License to Kill. So the guy – so Teaspoon from the Young Riders, you know, blowing up.
Yes.
Poor random security guard who gets fed to maggots. Dies a slow maggot death overnight. Overnight. The other guy gets impaled on a forklift. Remember that one?
Yes.
I mean, there's just
– there's great kills in that movie.
Shark.
Great
kills. Devoured by the sharks. Remember the other guy? Another hapless security guy gets tossed into an electric eel aquarium.
Yes.
So many diabolical deaths.
And then, you know, it's not henchmen, but Dobby's death is spectacular. Inferno, you know.
Set on fire, then yes, it comes to an inferno. Just absolutely spectacular. I mean, then, like, remember, or how about those other guys in the Jeep they're chasing? They get crop dusted and you fly up a cliff.
I mean, yes.
Excellent, excellent stuff. I mean, really, Dalton, the henchman death in Dalton films, really, like, you know, Necros, our boy Necros, tossed out of the back of the cargo plane, you know?
Yeah, those are really, those are a lot more violent than any of the Bonds that had come before them.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
We just didn't care in the 80s. We just did not care.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Necros himself did inflict pain as well, you know? I love when he rigged the automatic sliding door to, I guess, bisect one of Bond's informants, remember, in the carnival scene.
Yes.
I think I'm going to go with, but I'm trying to remember which one it's in. But it is a good one where it's a Japanese henchman, and she's sleeping with Bond, and she winds up getting poison thrown into her mouth instead of Bond randomly.
Oh.
I can't think of what. I'm trying to look up what movie it is.
I think it's You Only Live Twice. Don't they do it on a string, like a ninja?
Yeah, on a string.
Yeah.
Nice.
From a ninja, yes. So, oh, it is You Only Live Twice. Okay, there you go.
Nice.
There you go.
All right, let's continue the lightning round. Dan, do you have a Bond-related topic to throw out?
Stupidest stunt.
Nice. I'm going to go right into it.
Go.
It's a mixture of a fantastic stunt ruined by a stupid post-production decision. You know which one it is. It is
yes.
The car flip in Live and Let Die, correct?
Right.
Live and Let
the
Die.
Corkscrew.
The corkscrew, which is an actual stunt, which was unbelievable, but ruined by a slide whistle.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then a close-up of that dopey sheriff, like, screaming, like, whining or whatever. But just an amazing, like, actual stunt. If I were the stuntman, I'd be like, what did you
do? Be furious, yeah, because he had to have almost died.
I mean, it is amazing stunt, just sullied by some stupid sound work.
That would be mine, but I'll go with Roger Moore snowboarding in A View to a Kill.
That's terrible.
The Beach Boys, and then going across that water, that little pond.
Yeah, that's, oh man, that's
Roger Moore pushing 60.
That's right. Yeah. That's, I mean, our close tie is also in that movie where he's, you know, wrestling the fire truck against the rear projected screen.
Yes.
That was kind of hard to swallow.
Well, so since the obvious one of him riding the tidal wave in the invisible boat, that's already
gone.
Well,
that's a good one. Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's an awful one. I don't know. I'm trying to think.
You can abrade the ton of one. That's so terrible.
Because that one was so even terrible. Worse than Snake Plissken surfing.
Oh, way worse.
Escape from LA.
Way worse. Oh, it's so terrible.
Oh yeah. Oh no, it's absolutely horrendous stunt.
Like Bond is out running a satellite. You know. Oh, and he breaks the bad guy's land speed record too. You know.
Well, of course he does. He's a badass.
Just to rub it in. yeah, terrible. All right, Darryl, you got a random one to throw at us?
What's your favorite car?
Oh, good. Like it. Mm. My least favorite car has to be that dopey underwater one, right? Was that in Spy Who Loved Me?
Yes. Yeah, that would have been my favorite as a child.
Yeah, as a child, it was awesome.
I loved that. I was about 8.
And I don't think anybody's going to choose the Audis from the stuff from the more recent films.
Yeah, I'll go with Bond's lit car in Living Daylights. Was that a BMW or an Aston Martin? I can't remember what he was tooling around in. Whatever it was where it had the all terrain, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And then he set that bad boy to blow before they jumped on the cello to take off. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Yes, the cello. Skiing, that could be in the previous
non-car conveyance. Yeah.
That's a pretty timeless scene right there.
And she seems surprisingly calm when they shoot bullet holes in her, you know.
Well, very she's already riding cello. She's already riding it, you know.
Right. Yeah, the whole situation's got to be pretty surreal at that point.
I'm going to go with the DB5. I mean,
the DB5 is car, and it was a nice appearance of it in Skyfall. I was really happy to see it.
Yes.
It was a little bit of fan service, but not the kind of fan service that would have been if they'd made Albert Finney's role Sean Connery's role.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, you know, to get a little reaction from the crowd. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and really it was the machine guns and the ejector seat reference were the – because the car itself is actually set up in Casino Royale. He did win it.
And it essentially put to death the meme of you know, James Bond as a code name, right? That retconning. So that, you know, such a kind of finish that off. What was your was that your favorite car, Daryl?
Mine, no. I'll never give up the Lotus from For Your Eyes Only.
That was pretty dope.
Yeah.
He set that one to blow, too. That one got rigged to blow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that thing took out like a small block.
Yeah, but that is a sick car, and that's really an excellent one. Although the one from now that I'm looking up the pictures of him, the one from The Spy Who Loved Me is pretty funny looking. Mm-hmm. I'd drive that around.
Yeah, it's got those like louvers in the back windshield.
We
loved that car when we were kids.
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. That just occurred to me, another dumb stunt, it's in a movie I love, and I loved watching it, but the semi popping a wheelie in License to Kill.
Yes.
Know, that's rough. Again, points given because that was like the most grounded Bond, one of the most grounded Bond films made, and it was violent and great. And they actually built a semi that could do that, too. But again, it's
right.
Yeah. The thing I love about License to Kill, because I just watched it again, the thing I love about that is, the thing that makes it one of my favorites is the fact that it's all about Bond punking the villains, you know, making them think that they, making them distrust each other.
It is.
That's the brilliance.
That's true. And like, you know, to the point where they are killing each other violently because of that.
Right. He's like, you know, when Robert Davi's like, okay, we have a traitor in our midst, and, or, you know, he thinks he's found the traitor, and Bond is like, how do you know there's only one? You know, he's always doing stuff like that to.
That's right. Or planting all the money.
As paranoid as possible. Yeah.
Planting all the money in the decompression chamber, you know, leading to that guy's horrible, horrible death.
Right.
Just, yeah. Love it. All right. One more go around on this. So let's see. I'll throw out to you. Okay. Worst Bond girl. Or least favorite Bond girl.
Oh, Denise Richards is a nuclear scientist.
Yes. With her name being Christmas just for one line at the end.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, it's just conceptually ridiculous, and then you obviously after that have to deal with her acting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's about it. That she takes the cake.
Okay. A very similar pick. I'll go with Lois Chiles in Moonraker. Just horrible performance.
Yes. Again, with a name only used, you know, for innuendo purposes.
Yes, yes.
At least Pussy Galore was a character the whole time.
Yeah.
As a name.
And at least Holly Goodhead has, it is an innuendo that stands on its own, as opposed to Christmas Jones, which means nothing until you get to the last line
of
the
book. Right,
and it's like, oh, that's why she was named Christmas Jones. Okay, now I get it.
And Moonraker, like, really cranks up the innuendo. I mean, it's not even, like, subtle. Like,
no.
Hugh's line at the end where, oh, Bond's preparing for reentry. That vomit in my mouth. I mean, A, it's Q saying that, and then B, it's like moldy old Roger.
There's all these, I've realized watching the Blu-rays that the Roger Moore years were full of these endings where Q is spying on Bond, nailing the main Bond girl.
It's
revolting. It's really
revolting. You know his pants are off the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, it says like a mechanical dog that comes in, you know, and sees him in the shower or something. Or, oh, man, it's awful.
It is. Yeah, terrible. Okay, I mean, mine would be Halle Berry in Die Another Day. Just terrible. Just everything's bad, and like, you know, the Jinx thing just doesn't make sense. Again, it was pretty obvious they're trying to backdoor a franchise spinoff, I guess. And I mean, just,
and it's the kind of stunt casting that nobody needs.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't even very interesting, and it was
no. It's just a reason to put Halle Berry in a Bond movie,
and a reason to have an evil female villain so that the female villain can fight the female protagonist. You know, and then with just a terrible line at the end.
As always. You know.
Yeah, just.
It's the Superman 2 one that we always make fun of.
Superman 2.
Oh, you know, you're a real pain in the neck.
Yeah, you're
then,
a real
you know.
Pain in the neck.
The Lois punches her
Lois
out.
Lois punches you know. Her out, yes. Yeah. You're a pain in the neck. Dan, what's your final lightning round question?
Let's see. We've done Bond girls, cars, stunts. Let's go least favorite Bond.
Like the movie or the character?
Actor.
Actor.
Yeah.
Actor. Moore. Roger Moore had his first couple of movies were okay, and my previous favorite is technically a Roger Moore movie in The Man with the Golden Gun. But he became fat and strange by 1979. and it became really hard to watch him at all. Everybody else I can at least tolerate, even in the worst movies as characters, but those last Roger Moore Bonds are sort of surreal.
They are. I mean,
not,
like,
they are.
That's
they
probably
in a fun, surreal way, like in a horrid, surreal, in a nightmarish, surreal way.
See, yeah, I guess
his last three are
unwatchable.
Well,
what are his last three? What are his last three? So obviously, View to Kill. What are his other one? What are the other two before that?
Actually, it's not technically his last three because it's. I would say Moonraker. Then you have For Your Eyes Only.
See, that's the thing. Like, Roger Moore is in my least favorite Bond movies, no doubt.
Yes.
You know, easily. But he's in one of my favorites, which is For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
they kind of straighten him out. And he was not bad in that. I mean, he was borderline badass. When he kicks that car over with the dove inside it,
mm-hmm.
even though Roger Moore himself did not want that to happen, right, apparently, right?
Right.
I mean, but that was great. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, didn't Glenn direct that movie? Or
yeah.
Is there something he was connected with that somehow? Which kind of gives you a sense of what was to come for License to Kill, but he's been in the ones I hate the most, but he's been in a few that I like, and you know, when he's charming, he's charming. But he, as an action guy, he is the least believable action. I mean, watching a Roger Moore fist fight is a joke.
It's a joke. He seems like mm-hmm. he can play a cop in a precinct. But that's as far as I'm willing to go with him as an action person.
As an action guy, it's a joke. As like the suave horn dog, sure. You know, I could get that. And he can deliver his one-liners great. And, you know, like when he puts his mind – like the thing was I never felt like – I always felt like he was in it just to bang girls, you know, or like – it was or to drink scotch or something. It just – when he suits up in The Spy Who Loved Me. Which again, pretty good Bond, I thought, for the most part. When they kind of mutiny and take over that sub, that's kind of cool. He's kind of leading guys. He's the commander. That's pretty cool. You know, there's some corny stuff, obviously, but
yeah, they really ratchet up the sex in the Roger Moore.
They really
thing, which
do,
is, which is bizarre,
and you know,
due to his age and stuff. But I mean, like his movies start off with him having sex with some
he's
chick,
having
as
sex,
opposed
and
to
then
action.
The stunt happens, and then the stunt happens
right.
before the end of the before the credit sequence. But you know, like
he's literally having sex for no reason that advances either the plot or his mission.
I can imagine,
like, why
Roger
did he bang
Moore
his James in a beautiful kill? Why? What's the point?
I can imagine James Bond, Roger Moore's James Bond, going to 70s key parties.
Yes, of course. Yes.
And that's pretty much what I feel like goes on in most of those.
Well, I don't think it's any – it can't be any, like, coincidence that Dalton's two movies were – like, Living Daylights was essentially sex-free, right? I mean, like, at the very end, he makes out with the hot cello player. But there's
mm-hmm. – he lands on that boat. That's in
– Oh, he lands on the boat. That's right. And he says, you know, come pick me up.
Oh, yeah.
So it's – but again, though, that is tame stuff. And in License to Kill – you know, there's implications here and there, but, I mean, he makes out with, like, they're in the boat after he wipes some dudes out with, like, antlers and swordfish and stuff, right, in that bar fight. But again, it comes after a bar fight, so you can forgive him, you know?
It's pretty dark. He's a little chew-chased in the Dalton years.
He's a little
because it was the AIDS years, you know
what I mean?
Yeah, it
was the AIDS years, and a lot of those, like, outside of, like, a few strip club scenes here and there, there wasn't really much sex in the Seagal and Van Damme.
That's a good point.
80s action movies either.
Well, save for, this is a quick digression, save for the dumbest love scene ever filmed, which was in...
The shower scene in Hard to Kill?
That was terrible. I'm talking...
That's horrible.
I'm talking about the one in Double Impact.
Oh, God. That's way later.
Where it's
worse.
He's on a boat, and he actually daydreams the love scene. And that's how he sees it. He daydreams it. So okay, but you're right, though. He was pretty chaste. And then I think they made up for it with Brosnan doing the same. But I think they found a pretty good balance with Craig,
well,
don't you think?
They had a fair amount of sex in it. With And Onatopp was a good Bond girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For that. And I thought they could have – and then they totally shot it all to hell on the subsequent two or three movies. But –
But I do think they found a pretty good balance with Craig. You know, he's mm-hmm. especially Casino Royale. I mean, he's pretty ruthless as far as you know he loves him and leaves him. You know, it's all about the mission for him.
Yeah, and all he really does in this one, outside of like the weird old school fireworks scene that may or may not imply that he and Moneypenny had sex.
Oh yeah.
All he really does is creep in on some poor lady in the shower.
That's right.
That's
and then he has post Scorpion tequila sex with that woman in the Caribbean. Remember? So, but that's just But that's just him kind of showing he's at the end.
He was so drunk and on pills.
That's right. We give him a pass.
He's actually doing much in all of that.
I guess although I will say though, I've been hard on him, and the movie isn't bad. Like Your Majesty's and Your Majesty's Secret Service isn't bad, but Lazenby just does not do it for me. I mean, the action of that movie is legit, because there's the whole end is just a sustained action sequence. There's great stuff in there. But up to that point, you want to talk about horny, come on, you know?
He has some of the best jokes for that, though.
I mean,
I can't pull them off the top of my head now, but but there are some really solid jokes.
Well, I just can't get past the pre-credits, camera sped up, dusk beach fight scene, you know, which was awful.
Yes.
An awful line at the end, but I mean, and like Lazenby was gifted like decent source. He was gifted one of the all-time great Bond girls in Diana Rigg, you know, and he was gifted a rich backstory where he gets married and he can emote when she gets wasted by Blofeld. But beyond that, I mean, again, when he's making the rounds in the chalet with that skirt, man, that's rough. That's rough.
Yeah, so. They had, you know, throughout the years, they sort of came close to weird casting decisions. Like, they wanted Burt Reynolds at one point. They came very close to James Brolin. Like, James Brolin tested, and they were going to have him be American and everything.
Oh, wow.
And it seems like Lazenby is the one time where they kind of actually went off the rails.
Yeah.
For a while. They just, you know, hired some guy who's a model that one of them saw at the hair salon or something, you know, and thought, man, he looks like James Bond. Let's hire that guy.
He's handsome.
Right.
He is handsome. He does have that dimpled chin. And,
dimpled
you know,
chin, right.
I mean,
I don't know. It's just like, it just came to me as like a preening douche for a lot of things. So I don't know. But
and he was wearing a kilt, and that doesn't help his cause in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the sex kilt does not help. So, and again,
no, but it helps
I think
him.
The movie is quality overall, and it does have some of the most underrated action stuff. I mean, there's great stuff that goes on at the end.
Yeah, he was no great shakes in a fight either.
That's true. And again, looking at that beach, yeah, the beach fight was rough.
But he's also a model and not a...
Right.
So you got to cut him a little bit of slack.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he's dubbed through half the movie.
Oh, man.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is brutal.
It's like the filmmakers like give him this rich stuff and a lot of these, you know, give him a lot of stuff to work with. They also just hamstring him with a bunch of crap too.
We're gonna kick James Bond around for a couple hours.
Yeah,
see how you guys like it.
Here's this legendary actress playing a fantastic Bond girl that has far-reaching implications for the whole franchise, but you're gonna have to run around like a gigolo for half an hour or two in the Swiss Chalet. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I'm kind of torn. So yeah,
that movie did inspire the best main villain death in Blofeld getting dropped down a.
Yes.
Yes.
Even though that movie's terrible, that scene is awesome.
Well, but that's For Your Eyes Only, though, right?
Oh, no, that is For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, that's a great start to a great movie.
I thought of View to a Kill for a second, sorry.
No, View to a Kill is a snowboard.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. All right.
Oh, View to a Kill.
Yeah.
All right, well,
he's so ancient in that movie.
So ancient. I mean, what the heck? Yeah.
It's awful. Yeah, I mean, my choice would be Roger Moore for all the reasons stated. And although, to his credit, I mean, he did pretty much save the franchise.
And I do feel kind of
he
bad.
Was enormously.
He was a guy I watched growing up. You watched
him growing up. You have a little bit of affection for him.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Right. And I love the – you know, I like the fact that Live and Let Die is essentially a Starsky and Hutch episode with James Bond in it. I kind of like that. You know, it's all these muscle cars and Harlem and, you know, it's the weirdest James Bond movie
it's
ever, but I like
incorrect.
It.
It's so politically incorrect too, you know.
Right. Voodoo and, you know, all this weird stuff. Man with the Golden Gun I like. So I mean, there are a number of his, probably half of his movies I like.
Remember,
four out of the seven.
He ruins Jane Seymour by, you know, he ruins her tarot card reading ability, right? By deflowering her. Isn't that what he does?
Right.
I mean, come on, just think about that.
Where I wonder if that's where the whole Roger Moore era went crazy. was because that movie did make a lot of money after Honor Majesty's Secret Service didn't, and then they had to bring Connery back, and then, you know, then they replaced it with Moore. And so it was sort of like, okay, we're okay. We're going to survive. But his being oversexed in that movie kind of makes sense because it's built into the plot, you know, that her powers come from her virginity and everything. And it's like, did they just get the idea that that was the selling point and just ran with it through the 70s and into the 80s because it was so weird. You know, it just got
I mean, it's still kind of gross to think about, you know, 50-year-old Roger Moore deflowering this lovely daylily that is Jane Seymour, you know.
It's such a weird casting because he was old. I mean, he is older than Sean Connery. So they replaced Sean Connery with someone who's a couple years older than him. when Connery's already, you know, in his 40s. Yeah.
Yeah, no, when my dad is in as good a shape as Roger Moore at the end, like, that's not James Bond.
Yeah, right.
You can't, it's not James Bond.
Yeah,
you compare him favorably to your dad, it's not James Bond.
It's not James Bond. I love my dad, but it's not James Bond.
Yeah. Multiple chins, moobs, the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole comb over. Come on.
Come on.
Yeah, and the shirt off half the time.
Yeah, and the hair that's so heavily sprayed that it looks like straw.
Yeah.
So it's just really creepy.
It is rough.
But since we've already discussed that, I'm going to go, based on what's left, I'll go with Brosnan. Now, who I thought was solid, actually, but has the unfortunate, whatever, fate of, I think he gets better as his films get worse.
Yeah.
I think he's a better Bond in Die Another Day than he was in Goldeneye.
Yeah, he's a victim. He's like the reverse of Lazenby, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's fed like just steady dollops of, like, his most grunt is, like, would you agree that Goldeneye is his best?
That's his best movie, I think.
Best movie,
all
yeah.
Around.
Which, yeah, I mean,
yeah, I know what you're saying about being a better Bond.
I think his best Bond is in either The World Is Not Enough or Die Another Day. Things get way too silly in Die Another Day, but there are parts of both of those movies where he is just a vicious killer.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's really smooth, and you know he's a very well-rounded Bond in those later entries.
Well, the fact that he gets
progressively more ridiculous,
he gets tortured over the course of the opening credits is kind of
interesting. True. And it would have been interesting to see what, because he was supposed to be the Bond, but when Timothy Dalton was brought in, but couldn't because of Remington Steele, right?
Well, isn't that like the Bond history? Like, Moore was supposed to come on earlier, but he was doing the Saint stuff. Dalton was cast way back when, but I hope it wasn't because of Flash Gordon. They kept him from
that. No. They offered it to Dalton during the Lazenby point. But he was 21 or 22, and he said, no, I'm too young to.
How do you say no to that?
He passed it. Yeah.
Another point for Timothy Dalton.
Right, T-Doll
is so badass. And he says, no, I'm so badass now. I'm not, Bond's not ready for me yet, you know?
Right, exactly. I've got Baron whatever.
I've got some tree people to say.
Right.
I stick my hand in a stump. Sorry, I can't help it out. Yeah. I think that Brosnan makes sense in that. I mean, I still probably prefer Goldeneye, and I think he was getting into some stuff in Goldeneye. You know, when Sean Bean was kind of like calling him out in a lot of his, you know, you're banging all these women to silence the guys you've killed. That guy, I mean, that's the first time in a while I remember, like, they really kind of got into that James Bond pathology. So, you know, they were getting close to that stuff, but.
Yeah. But he's not quite in the character's skin in that.
Right. Yeah.
He's pretty decent, but not.
Yeah, he's a suave guy in general. But he's not Bond so much in that movie, not as we wound up knowing him.
Yeah.
But what he was saddled with for those movies were just – for those subsequent movies were just awful. They look cheap.
I mean, he didn't have a decent counter – he didn't have a decent Bond girl after Goldeneye, did he? I mean
– not really. I mean,
Michelle
Yeoh
was physically great, but she was, you know, stiff. Obviously, Denise Richards, you know, Halle Berry. That's it, right? Yeah, four. He had four.
Those
right?
are the main ones, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the villains are, you know, Rupert Murdoch is a villain, basically.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but it doesn't lend itself to good suspense.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like each movie is a riff on a previous movie rather than being its own thing. To me, it's like, The World Is Not Enough is almost an analysis of Honor Majesty's Secret Service, because the two plot-wise match up so much. And Die Another Day is almost Diamonds Are Forever again.
So
it's a weird, you know, it's just a weird era, I think.
Which is where I think Skyfall really excelled in that, because when the casino scene, where I felt like he really became the traditional Bond, it wasn't it didn't feel like anything from old Bond. It just felt like they were saying, okay, now it's on.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to roll with it as him, as old school James Bond, and
he's into
all this stuff. Yeah, and he's into it, and he's totally
all in. He's all
I mean, he's strutting through that casino. That was an awesome scene, and he looks great doing it.
Well, and the payoff is even more so than that when he reports to duty for M, you know. And you can just tell, like, you know, when he says with pleasure, with pleasure, I mean, he is all in at that point. I mean, there's really.
It had a ridiculous giant gecko scene.
That's right.
Yes.
That's, again, a nice little callback and a pretty good one-liner, the circle of life. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
While that poor guy screams to death. I mean, there's no maggot scene, but that's a pretty rough way to go. Devoured by a Komodo dragon. So.
Yeah. Yes.
And it has to be said, we haven't mentioned it yet. We talked about this, but I absolutely love that shadow profile fight scene at the top of the
yes.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it was brief, really, but it was just so cool and unique. What a great.
I mean, this is what happens when you get Deacons to shoot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wow.
You know, I mean, it easily just looks so beautiful.
But has there ever been a Bond movie that looked like Skyfall? I mean,
I don't think so. And, I mean, you look at how Quantum of Solace was shot, and it was so typical modern action, fast cut, shaking cameras, and not, I mean, basically unwatchable in a lot of ways. And this was old style and gorgeous.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Dale, polish off this lightning round. You got something?
We've already talked a little bit about stunts, but I just want to know what your actual favorite stunt in the Bond movies are.
So many favorite ones. And now this is where we've dumped on Roger Moore a little bit, but I am still dumbfounded by this stunt. The skier in the luge there in the bobsled run. That is unbelievable. I think some poor dude died from that. I don't know. Some poor guy died. But every time I watch that, man, it is just unreal. I mean, it's just unreal. Stick this poor guy in the luge running. You know, go for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just any stunt where someone's, you know, there's some actual human being's life in mortal danger. You know, I always go, oof.
It's an Indonesian action movie.
Indonesian action movies. That is after you. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that was, I mean, that's the first thing to me, that's like the first thing I always think about, just as far as an insane scene.
That is a good one. Mine will be, I'm going to go Roger Moore too, because despite the fact that he's my least favorite Bond, they were insane during that era.
See, that's the thing. Again, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so I'm going to go my least favorite Bond, my absolute least favorite Bond movie, the opening sequence of Moonraker, where out of the plane.
Yes.
And he jumps out of the plane without the parachute and steals the guy's parachute.
That was crazy. Yeah. And the Jaws
that's fantastic.
Stop, right?
And you can tell that, you know, it's somewhat real.
Well, I mean, because it starts with him on the outside of the plane, right?
Right.
Am I thinking the same one where he's on the – or is that the end? No, that's the end of Octopussy. That was an insane stunt.
Yes, that's
terrible
a
movie.
Insane stunt too.
A terrible movie. But, yeah, that's one where some hapless stunt guy is on the outside of a plane and crawls inside. Yeah. That was insane. But, yeah, the one you're talking about too is pretty crazy as well. See, that's the thing. But again, Roger Moore's not doing any of that stuff. He's just parked in front of a reprojection screen. You know, so like there's a guy actually on top of
– It's one of the things that makes those movies watchable.
Yes, that's right.
You know, there's one – I think it's in Man with a Golden Gun or maybe Live and Let Die. But there's one where this car just gets completely T-boned by a bus. I guess it would be Live and Let Die because I think Jane Seymour was in the bus. It's like a double-decker bus. And you can tell that the stunt just went wrong because a car gets out in front of it and it just gets plowed by this bus, nailed really hard. And you just know, oh, man, that stuntman probably got hurt on that one. And they just kept it, you know. Yeah. It's like, well, that's too awesome not to put it in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some other ones jump to mind. I'll probably steal yours, Joe. But, like, again, License to Kill, much love. But the water skiing on the back of the plane water skiing thing, that's pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah, that's a six stunt. No question.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty sweet.
Even
plane-related.
This isn't my vote, but the jump off the dam in GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's legit. That's right. Or the, again, one of my favorites, but I keep coming to it, the cargo plane fight scene in Living Daylights, you know?
Yes.
And there were two clowns on the back of that thing. That's crazy. Yeah.
And then somebody gets kicked off the back of the cargo plane, right?
Yeah, Necros.
Straight. Necros there, yeah.
But, yeah, the commentator.
Shoelaces.
That's right. And again, great, and he got the boot. Fantastic. But in the commentary said they just, like, that, like, they really did that, and they had to do a lot of reshoots because the dude just kept falling off, you know? Mm-hmm. And
fired. Dude just kept falling off the plane.
That's right. I mean, just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. So, all right. Well, I think it's just Daryl.
Yeah, so my actual vote isn't one of the biggest stunts, but it's always been awesome to me, is from the Man with the Golden Gun, the car jump scene where the bridge is out. And they're driving. I don't remember exactly what car it is, but the bridge is out, and they hit the side of the bridge, which is sort of like turned up, and they jump a river and do a full 360-degree twist and land on the other side and drive away and get away. And every time, or especially when I first saw it, it was just, man, that is ridiculous. It is a great car jump. Certainly the greatest car jump I've ever seen.
Oh, man. Yes.
That is, and, you know, again, that qualifies for both sides, I think. Best stunt and worst stunt because of the slide whistle.
With the slide whistle. That's true, actually, yes. That's right.
But it is a magnificent, you know, that's the horrible thing about that slide whistle, is it's such a great stunt.
It's a great stunt.
Yes.
And they make a mockery of it.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yes.
And you know, that guy was like, that stuntman was sweating, you know, for his children being orphans and his wife being a widow before he did that. And then they put a slide whistle in there.
But he hit it.
The bastards. Yeah. It's fantastic.
So, yeah, it does qualify for best and worst in those ways. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we could go on and on, but we actually clocked in a solid hour, which might be a record for an objection podcast here. So I think our funding should be extended through 2013 at least. Don't you think, Dan?
Yeah.
I think
that'll cover us.
I think we should be pretty good to go. So, yeah, I think that's a wrap up for objections. So, Daryl and Dan, thank you for talking some Bond. And, man, I got nothing else to say, Dan, unless you have something else to add.
Thanks. 10 points easy.